Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia 7-year warranty. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia has you covered. Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia 7-year warranty. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia has you covered.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. Wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. Getting more and more critical as we approach Easter weekend. Let's hope the religious meaning of Easter weekend for a lot of people is reverberates in real time and real in reality throughout society. Laura Casey, Lauren, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. Now, this was the your accidental friend generated by this awful virus. COVID-19. How did this happen?
So, Joe, I was out walking the other day within my 2 kilometre radius, obviously.
Okay.
And I got a phone number from, a call from a phone number that I hadn't recognised. So I answered it anyway.
Yeah.
And he said his name was Jack Ryan. He's from Carlow. He was 84 years old. And he was trying to get in contact with his local Garda station, but he rang me by accident.
Okay.
And he actually said that he'd gotten through to a lady in Waterford first, before he rang me, but she actually didn't help him at all. So he mentioned that he was looking to get a newspaper, but that he was too scared to leave his house at the moment with all the restrictions on, and that he didn't want to get in trouble with the Garda. So I said, hang on there, Jack. And then we were just talking for a minute. I didn't know what to do, to be honest with you. So we were just chatting then for a minute. I was asking him what he was doing with himself to keep busy. He said that he had a big garden and that he liked going out to the garden, cleaning that up, and he said that he was tending to his flowers and stuff. And he also said that he had a TV set, but it wasn't great now. It only got a couple of stations. Okay. And that he had just watched a movie called In the Name of the Father the other night, and he was telling me all about that.
Great. So you're having a right proper chat as if you were old buddies.
Yeah,
and you've never met this person before in your life?
No, not at all.
Okay. And you're a different age category, are you, Lauren?
Yeah, I'm 25.
If this man, Jack Ryan, is 84, and have you got a granddad?
I do, yeah. I have two, luckily.
Well, it looks like you have a third one.
I have a new best friend by the end of it.
And so have you chatted to him since?
Yeah, actually, he rang me back. So after we had our chat, I felt my heart absolutely broke afterwards. So I rang down to the Garda station in Carlow and I asked if anyone was around, would they maybe give him a ring? I passed on his phone number and if somebody could just drop him up in a newspaper. And then he rang me back then at maybe 5:30 later and said that a lovely garden named Darren called up to him and brought him the paper. And he said if he needed anything else, Jack said to me that he actually gave him the number for his squad car and that if he needed anything else, that he'd go and get him something. So he said, Lauren, I told him then I went off and I got €2 and I asked him, would you drop down to the shop for me and get me some yogurt? So Darren brought him back up some yogurt after.
Brilliant.
So, yeah.
So he's your new bestie?
He's my new bestie, yeah.
Okay, and he's on the other line, Jack Ryan.
Yeah, that's right.
How are you keeping?
I'm keeping very well, thank God.
And Jack, what do you want to say to your new best friend?
I tell you, she was very, very nice with me, and we had a lovely friendly chat.
Yeah.
And of course I didn't know who she was or anything.
Yes.
And I told her actually what happened. The first time I rang was I left out the prefix 059.
Okay.
And that's how I ended up with her. wasn't it a lucky stroke?
so you got someone, you're in Carlo and someone in Bray answered.
Oh,
where Lauren is, yeah.
Yeah, that's where Lauren
and
is.
Had you tried the number? Had you phoned other people beforehand, Jack?
No. I did. I phoned one other person, and that was down in Waterford. I think it was in Waterford. And anyway, there was hardly any chat. And
did you phone the other person accidentally as well, Jack?
I did, yeah.
I did, okay.
Okay. And I couldn't understand how I didn't get through, because, but the thing then it suddenly hit me. Yeah. I was leaving out the 0059.
Yeah.
So then I rang and I got Lorraine and so on. And yeah. I found her very nice to talk to. And I was, when I got Lorraine in Bray, I explained that I wanted to get to the guards, and yeah. I just discussed the thing with her a bit. I said, is this very stupid? I said, me ringing up the guards, asking them to get me a Sunday newspaper.
Right.
And she said, that's not ridiculous at all.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I did. I rang up then with the 059, and I rang Carlo, and the guard, Lady Garda in Carlo, answered me, and I thought, I didn't know what I was going to, what she might say,
yeah.
But, oh no, she says, look, I look after you now, she say, and I get him out, he's out on patrol, out somewhere, and he'll be probably near you.
Okay.
So she did, and next thing the Garda car came up, and
okay.
A lovely guard got out, a very nice chap, and he was on his own name, Darren, and he's
okay.
from Kilkenny, and we're all identifying ourselves.
Well done.
I told him,
yeah.
I said, oh, do you mind? I said, getting me a paper.
Right.
I said, not at all, I'll get you a paper. Now, I have excellent friends,
yeah.
or neighbours,
great.
Beside me. But Sunday morning, they have a lie on. And I'm an early riser.
Yeah, good man.
So as a result of that, I was anxious to get... All I wanted was really the television.
Ah, yeah.
I'm not interested now. It's just to get the television and see what was on. And
and what newspaper do you want every day, Jack?
No, I don't get a newspaper every
day.
I have the radio.
Good man.
And I listen to the radio.
Because On Puss have just started. It's a magnificent. On Puss have been magnificent in all of this. On Puss have now started a new system. If you have a subscription to a newspaper, they will deliver it to your house free.
Yeah.
If you want it. You want a newspaper.
Yeah.
Would you like a newspaper every day?
How do I get it?
Tell me and we'll get it for you, Jack. Tell me, and we'll get on to Anna McHugh or David McRedmond, and we'll organise. What's,
yeah.
What do you want? Do you want the Indo, the Times, the Mail, the Examiner?
I suppose the Times.
Star. The Times, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we get on to the Irish Times. We'll get your address afterwards. And what we do is you deliver the Irish Times every day. Well, and the Irish Times doesn't come out on a Sunday. They don't deliver Sunday papers, obviously, or Saturday, because there's no post.
Yeah,
but we'll get you the Irish Times Monday to Friday, and then you'll get Saturday's one on Monday. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. And we get that on Puss to deliver it. That's the service.
Yeah.
They deliver it free. Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Are you on your own, Jack? That's what
I'm living on my own. My wife is dead. She's gone on the seventh year of her death. Yeah.
Now,
we were very happy.
And because you're over 70, you're cocooned. You can't go out.
Oh, that I know.
I know.
And that's how I'm really amused by all this. That I'm talking on radio just for the sake of a newspaper.
No, it was just it's serendipity, isn't that what it's called? Where you
that's
bump into things,
right.
Things happen. Lauren, is it Lauren or Lorraine? Which do you call
it's
yourself?
It's Lauren.
Lauren. Okay. Have you ever seen Jack?
No.
And have you seen a photograph of him?
No, I haven't seen a photo of him.
And Jack, have you seen a photograph of Lauren?
No, not at all. I've only met her on the phone.
I might send you a text.
Pardon?
I might send you a text message with one.
Yeah, do.
That's fair enough.
And have you children, Jack?
I have four great children.
Great.
The two girls and two boys. And the girls are up in Wicklow, and one boy, and the other chap is in Sandyford.
Okay.
And they're all very, very good to me.
Well done, great.
Yeah, and I have a great family support.
Okay, and have you grandchildren, Jack?
I have 11.
11, and what age is their day? What's the age range?
They range from 6 to 22, I think.
So Lauren is now your eldest grandchild, she's 24.
Oh, she'd be very welcome.
Great. And you know the first missed call you made, missed dial, and someone answered. And what, they just, did you ask them the same question, how do I contact the Gardaí and how do I...
I said, I can't understand why I'm not connecting with the Gardaí, because I had everything right on the number, but I had left out 059. And this happens to me now and again. In Carlow, you're not basically using the 059 at all. If you want to... ring local, yeah.
And
now, we're very good down here for ringing. There are about 5 or 6 ring me, and I do the same.
Super, well done.
So there's a great, yeah.
And Lauren, what do you do in real life when we ever get back to real life?
I'm a digital designer.
A digital designer?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that is, Jack?
She explained it to me.
Oh, did she?
We talked about it earlier.
Well, what is a digital designer, Lauren?
Pretty much like a graphic designer, but for anything to do with web. So graphics and websites and stuff.
Well done. And up to this, where you're working, are you still working? Are you still working?
Yeah, still working. Still working at this moment in time, and they'd say they're all listening to me now.
And what's do you want to give your company a shout-out?
Yeah, it's Isobar Ireland.
Isobar Ireland.
Isobar.
Yeah, sounds good. And you're living in Bray?
I live in Bray, yeah.
Okay. Now, did you ever hear, Jack might have, Lauren, did you ever hear of a book that comes out every Christmas called Old Moore's Almanac?
No, I've never heard of that.
Okay, did you ever hear of it, Jack?
Yeah, I did. My mother used to always talk about
it. Do you want to explain to your granddaughter there what Old Moore's Almanac is?
Well, I haven't read it for years and years, but I think they make prophecies and things
you're
like
right.
that.
Bang
in
on.
It.
Yeah, bang on. And Thomas O'Kine is on. Tomás, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Good afternoon.
Jack did a very good. I dropped a minute there. I said, "What is Old Moore?" Would you tell go into more detail about what is Old Moore's Almanac?
Well, I suppose I used to hear about it when I was young too. It was in the house a few times, and I didn't see it then for donkey's years. And then I told a researcher there, I happened to spot it in January, but my good wife told me since that she didn't spot it. It was a friend of hers that gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd like it. Anyway, I picked it up over the weekend when I had and I started going through it, and I was refreshing my mind. Old Moore has been around for 300 years or more. 1764, I think, was the first edition. So it's continuously printed. It never missed a year since then. And I kind of do the sums there.
Okay, so it does, as Jack is right, it does prophecies, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And horoscopes.
I don't know how good he is. I sent you in some of the prophecies he made this year, which were on the first or second, third page.
Yeah, go on. Tell us the ones that jumped out at you. These are prophecies obviously written in 2019 in Old Moore's Almanac, which is peculiar to Ireland, isn't it?
No, 2020.
2020, yeah. I know, but they would have been written in 2019.
Well, it's the 2020 predictions.
Yeah, and they are
global movements. An unusual virus has people worried. A drug resistant fungus causes problems. I suppose that's the nearest thing we have for the present.
Yeah.
World politics. Well, I suppose this was predictable. The 2020 U.S. elections brings a new level of division to America, with violent clashes between opposing sides. Trump will not serve a second term. His fate is sealed in an unusual twist, although he does not go quietly. Irish Affairs. There will be an election in 2020. We know the Greens hold the key to power.
Yeah.
Property prices decline. Business and rental companies are more at risk than average homeowners.
Okay.
There will be pressure to increase corporation tax. Society.
Yeah.
Those are headings. The world of work will change fast. More and more people will work from home. Heading media teams. In 2020, we'll be dealing with fake video and fake audio that are so convincing we won't know what to believe. I suppose if I moved on a little bit more, I noticed under sport, the heading a few pages on, which obviously won't happen now, but Old Moore predicted Tiger Woods would win the Masters. So that's not going to happen.
You know? Okay, so it's called Old Moore's. Does anyone out there, we tried to contact Old Moore's Almanac last Christmas because someone else was looking for copies of it. If anyone has any connection with Old Moore's Almanac 2020, will you give us a shout on 1850 715 815, joe@rt.ie, or 51551, wash your hands, text number. It has predictions, horoscopes. It has a list of fairs and marts and horse fixtures, not many of them on this year. It has a monthly weather guide, obviously a prediction, and much, much more. Beware of, it's printed in Ireland, it says, beware of spurious editions. Are we sure this is not a spurious edition that someone wrote last week?
No.
You have it since Christmas.
This one has 114 pages, including the covers.
Now,
it's printed in A5 size, I think.
Yeah. Do they do the tides as well, don't they? Am I right?
They do,
yeah. Okay, okay.
There's
will you go in, while we have you there, Tomás, will you go into lotto number predictions for the 9th, or for the 8th of April 2020, and just give me those numbers off air, will you? And I'll buy the ticket this evening in my local Mace.
If I can find them.
So you're saying Old Moore's Almanac predicted a virus sweeping the world.
Yeah.
Predicted more people working from home.
Yes.
Predicted Trump being defeated, but it being an awful election campaign that culminates in some violence. Is that correct?
And he won't go easy.
Good God. But he is going to be defeated. That's what Old Moore's Almanac is predicting.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you believe that stuff? Maybe every year they predict a virus.
I do a lot of predictions, and we're going through the whole lot of them. You know, there's some of them, I suppose, if you were watching World Affairs, you could see them coming. But, I suppose, personally, I'd like to believe that Trump will be defeated. Whether he will be or not, I don't know. But I'd like to believe it.
Okay, we wait and see.
I was looking up there that he was, I thought he was, I put a note in that he was a Leo. And what I found, since he was a Gemini, and I kind of thought, well, I'm not really much into stars, but the Leo one always got me, because years ago I remember seeing one of those hilarious things about stars, and it told you what was good about you and what was bad about you. Okay. So the one that struck me with the Leo was the fact that he kissed mirrors a lot, meaning he loves himself, you know.
Okay, Old Moore's Almanac, whoever you are, come out and talk to us and give us the lotto numbers for tomorrow, because you seem to be bang on. Whoever wrote, it's written in Ireland, isn't it? Printed in Ireland, written in Ireland.
It's printed in Bray Business Park.
Okay.
Bray.
That's right. Well, look, Lauren is near there, aren't you, Lauren?
It's
you,
me,
you,
I write it.
It's on the front of it in very, very small writing, right down the bottom, you can see it's printed in Bray Business Park, wherever, a number, unit number, whatever.
Okay, so, Tomás, that's worth hearing. Old Moore's Almanac got something right, whether it's by accident. I presume it's by accident. You can't predict things like that. Jack, what did you work at when you were working in your long life?
I was a teacher in the CBS in Carlow.
Okay, and was that primary or second level?
Secondary.
And what were your subjects?
Maths and English.
Oh, wow. And how are you managing during the cocooning? How are you occupying yourself all day, every day?
I'm occupying myself well. I had neglected the garden, so okay. I'm out and I love gardening and it keeps me going. And I also read. I'm reading my second book. And then I walk. I do exercises in the morning.
Yeah,
for about 40 minutes, and then when I get my breakfast and that, I go out into the garden, and I walk around the garden.
Good man.
I have a fairly big garden. It's nearly an acre.
Yeah.
And I walk around it about 10 times. It takes me 20 minutes.
And just be careful. It's a flat. You won't slip or fall or anything, will you?
Oh, no, no.
Good
no,
man.
No.
And do you have a mobile phone?
Yeah.
Now, remember, when you're out walking in the garden, you need to bring your mobile phone with you, Jack. Just put it in your pocket.
Yeah.
In case you did have a little slip.
Yeah. And a friend of mine tells me to bring the little... gadget that warns people if you fall.
You wear it on your wrist. Have you got one of them?
I have.
Oh, great stuff. Oh, brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah.
We have the editor of Old Moore's Almanac, Elaine Kavanagh. Elaine, good afternoon.
Hi there, Joe. How are you?
How are you? And is Tomás reading out the current edition of Old Moore's Almanac?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your caller reading out the almanac.
He said your almanac predicted a virus.
That's right, yeah. That is from the 2020 edition. Our psychic, who every year comes up with these predictions for us, predicted that an unusual virus would have us all worried.
And is it a man or woman, the psychic?
It's a man, the guy who does it. He's been doing our predictions now for about the last 10 years. So, he's just predicted that this unusual virus would have people worried. He also predicted that more and more people would work from home.
Yeah, that's what Tomás spotted, yeah.
Yeah, and he's predicted that a global recession is coming. So, you know, we're kind of all expecting that, I think, as a result of this shutdown. So, he's certainly nailed a few of
Psychic in Ireland?
He is. He's based in Dublin, all right, yeah. Now, he doesn't like us to release his name. He likes to kind of prefer to fly under the radar, you know.
And how many times has he won the lotto?
He's not telling us and he's not sharing the money with us, Joe.
And tell us, what is Old Moore's Almanac? We got a good sense of it from Jack and Tomás. But Lauren, who's our... random guest today, because Jack rang her accidentally and they struck up a friendship. But Lauren had never heard of it, and she's 24 and very savvy and very tech savvy. And she lives in Bray. Tell us.
Well, it's an Irish magazine. It goes all the way back to the 1700s, believe it or not. It started in 1764. Yeah. Now, an almanac is usually, you know, it gives things like the sunrise and sunset times and the tides and stuff like that. And it would have traditionally been used by farmers and fishermen and, you know, people who would need to know all this information before we all had computers and smartphones and stuff. So the magazine started way back in 1764 by Theophilus Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the original psychic, and he put together this magazine it used to have puzzles that would keep people entertained in the days before TV, and it would give weather predictions for what was going to happen the following year, and then sunrise and sunset time. So we're delighted to say we're still going strong.
And how many copies do you print?
We print just under 50,000 copies a year. And, you know, we still have quite a substantial circulation. And we're also online now, of course. We're kind of reaching out to a whole new readership there.
And it's a fiver to buy.
It's fiver to buy, yeah. And it's available in most bookshops. It's also available online on our website.
And many people does it employ, or do you do other stuff?
There's four of us in the office, but, you know, we would have other writers maybe from time to time as well. So,
But it comes out once a year.
It comes out once a year, yeah. But we would have other stuff going up on the website.
And how did you become involved, Elaine?
I just was looking for a job and this came up. So, I kind of fell into it, I suppose.
Who owns Old Moore's Almanac?
It's owned by a company called Lithograph Printing.
Which are in Bray, aren't they? Are they in Bray?
Yeah, yeah, they're in Bray, yeah, yeah. So it's owned by them. And, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, they bought it a number of years ago, I think, maybe about 10 or more years ago.
Okay.
So before that now, I couldn't really tell you who owns it. But, yeah,
but there was an Old Moore. There was a Theophilus Moore.
Oh, there was a Theophilus Moore was the guy who started in the first place. Yeah, I mean, he was the guy in 1764 who launched it. Now, it was called the Irish Merlin back then, and eventually he put his name to it and called it Old Moore's Almanac.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fascinating history. And actually, all the old ones are in the National Library of Ireland. And they're quite fascinating to go in and look and read through the predictions.
But the whole site, by the way, do you take ads in it? Are there advertisements
in it?
Oh,
there's ads in it. Okay. So well, the current edition, I mean, the current edition, there's ads in it. There's lots of articles about all sorts of, you know, just kind of Irish relating stuff, do you know, that way, because it's an Irish magazine.
It's uniquely Irish.
It's uniquely Irish. So, like, this year, say, we did an article about all the whales and dolphins in the seas around Ireland. We did another article about a publican down in Kerry who's come up with this transport solution to help people get home from the pub. So there's all sorts of
Elaine, it only comes out once a year.
Only comes out just before Christmas, in December.
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of a tradition where people would buy it and look back at the old predictions and look forward at the next ones for the following year. Do you know that way?
Well, predictions have always been a part of it. That's the...
Always. From the start, the predictions was always the predictions, the sunrise and sunset times and the tides. That was always what it was about.
And
you know,
have you any idea how...
The rest has evolved.
How accurate the predictions have been, Elaine, over the years?
Well, we certainly get publicity every year for predictions, for the accuracy of predictions. Yeah, so, you know, there's been plenty of accurate ones, I suppose.
But you don't believe in that, do you?
Well, I don't know now. I'd be, you know, when I started the job, I would be sceptical enough. But when you see all these predictions that our guy gets, you have to, you know, we don't know. We reserve judgment on that now, you know.
Okay, Elaine, stay with us because we have... on the line, Henry Arrigo. Is that correct, Henry?
That's correct, Joe. That's correct.
And what's your connection with Old Moore's Almanac?
Well, my great-grandfather, who came from the province of or the canton of Ticino in Switzerland, the Italian-speaking part of it, came to Ireland in about 1860, and he acquired Old Moore's Almanac at some stage in the 19th century.
Okay.
He had his shop in Christchurch, place beside the Lord Edward pub, and he had his printing works in Kilmainham.
Okay.
And I know from my late father telling me that he found it very successful because he employed a barrister full time as editor, and there was a huge demand for it in the United States.
Wow.
By Irish immigrants in Canada and Australia.
Yeah.
And it was in the family until the business folded in around 1950. My father tried to acquire it back in the early 1980s, but wasn't successful.
So the Old Moore's Almanac was in your family for nearly a century?
It was indeed, yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's fascinating.
That's incredible.
Yes.
And can I ask you, Henry, was it profitable?
It was indeed. He found it very profitable.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
Yes,
brilliant.
Yes. Yes.
And what you're saying, it had a big following in the, among the diaspora, is in the States.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It had indeed. And every farmhouse in the country here in Ireland always had a copy of Old Moore's Almanac.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
And
because there was lots of puzzles and things like that. And people would send in.
And Henry, do you believe these predictions? Like they're uncannily true,
well,
with some of them.
Believe some of them, yes.
Yeah, but they're just guesses, aren't they?
Some of them turn out to be good guesses for the farmers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the predictions this year are pretty bleak, aren't they, Elaine?
Unfortunately, they are. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, a lot of the predictions can be quite bleak sometimes, you know, because I suppose that's the nature of news, isn't it? You know, we're looking at.
Yeah.
plane crashes and earthquakes and things like that. You know.
And Henry, your grandfather who acquired it in the 1860s or whatever, what, you're saying he had a shop in Dublin?
Yes, 16, 17 and 18 Christchurch Place.
Right.
There's now a hotel on the side of it.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed, I think one of his neighbours would have been the parents of the late Jimmy O'Dea.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy O'Dea.
Who had a decent O'Dea in Baldwin.
What was your grandfather's shop called?
It was John Arrigo and Sons Limited.
Oh, Arrigo.
Or John Arrigo and Sons.
Arrigo.
The Italian pronunciation, yeah.
A-R-I-G-H-O. And do you have... Correct. And do you have relatives still in Italy or the Swiss?
We do, yes, indeed. My great-grandfather's brother emigrated to Malta around the same time that he came to Ireland. And when I went to Malta some years ago, I met them. They seemed to be in the transport and... business. Mm. Indeed, one of them was a member of parliament there in Malta, one of the descendants, yes.
So does Henry Arrigo, do you still get Old Moore's Almanac?
I do, yes.
Oh, good man. Good man.
Yes.
Good man. Okay, it seems, is it harmless? It is harmless, isn't it? It's harmless, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But it was something that it was very popular in the pre-television days and even pre-radio days, you know.
Okay.
So yes.
Jack Ryan, some good news on Puss Up and On.
Yes.
They say they'll organise the Irish Times for you every day, every weekday, delivered to your hall door.
Well done
to the Irish Times and everyone involved there. Do you need anything else while we have you there, Jack? Do you need natural yogurt, Greek yogurt? What type of... You like your yogurt, obviously.
Oh, I do, in the morning.
Yeah,
I put it on my porridge.
Good man, good man. What do you miss most in the cocooning?
Getting out and meeting people.
Just meeting people, yeah. Yeah.
Meeting people, yeah.
And of course, that would have been your daily life in school, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you like school, yeah?
Oh, I loved teaching, yeah. I loved it. I was there for 44 years.
Good man, Jack. And Jack,
I enjoyed it.
Were you a good teacher?
Well, I remember one parent saying to me, I was a deputy principal, her son was a little bit troublesome, and I had him in.
Okay.
And anyway, when she came to the end, she turned around and she said to me, you know, you are a successful teacher.
great, good man. Well, you are, because we're getting calls. One of them is from Paul Hennessy. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
Was Jack your teacher?
Well, he was. I don't think Jack ever taught me, but Jack was in the school as long as I was there. How are you, Jack? How are you doing?
I'm very good, Paul.
And do you remember? You hardly remember Paul, do you, Jack?
No, you see, we had a reunion of 68-9. I started teaching in 57, and when there was 50 years then, and we had a reunion. Sure, I didn't know any of them. Okay. I'd have to say, who are you?
And I'll give you a hint,
yeah. Jack. My mom and dad, Tom and Claire, lived down the street from me there. Tom and Claire Hennessy.
So there's some of your names. Yeah, okay.
Oh, I do remember, Paul. Yeah, this is what happens to me. You're grand.
Paul, what type of teacher was Jack?
Well, I'm ringing in to Joe just to say, like, that, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people in Carroll listen to Jack as well, who wouldn't have seen Jack for years. My parents literally live, I'd say, a minute's walk from Jack's house. But anytime I'm living in Longford now, and anytime I'm in Carroll, I'd never see Jack. So I just texted my dad and said, Jack Ryan is on with Joe Duffy. And I said, I'm going to text in.
Good lad.
And he said, oh, sure, Jack is flying. He said, I see him around the place all the time. So just ringing in to say that Jack was one of the nicest people you would ever meet in your life. And you can hear it from him there on the radio.
Yeah, you can.
He's just an incredible man with a big smile that greets everyone every day in the school.
Good stuff.
So it's great to hear you, Jack, and great to hear you sounding so good.
And how are you managing in the emergency, Paul? How are you doing?
Yeah, all right. Family. I mean, I'm in the music business, as you probably know, and
we
have a few stage shows, and we have to close them, obviously. But I'm doing a few things on Facebook Live. I did a few concerts the last few weeks,
okay.
I did one on Sunday night, which was great fun, and it's amazing the way it connects with people. The way I just heard Jack there, I haven't heard from a long time, and then on Sunday night when I was doing it, there was people tuning in from all over all over the world.
Because you're Paul Hennessy. You're a tenor, aren't you?
That's me, John.
Good stuff. Okay, and, Paul.
I'm doing another. By the way, John, yeah, I'm going to do another one in a couple of weeks for charity. So if people want to tune in on the 19th, yeah,
give us a shout. We're here all over Easter. Give us a shout and we mention it if you want us to give.
Thank
it,
you, John.
Especially if it's for Pieta House. Okay, Paul Hennessy, thanks indeed.
Thanks, good to hear from you. Bye-bye.
Henry, what do you do yourself?
Well, I'm a retired solicitor.
Solicitor, okay. And how are you managing? Are you cocooned?
Not quite the age yet, no.
Oh, good man. Okay.
A couple of years off.
Okay, and how are you managing generally?
Very well, thank
good
you.
Good lad, good man. Lauren and Jackie, you're going to keep in touch with each other, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
And Lauren, thanks indeed. You're a star. You really are. You answered a missed dial, and you start talking to the man at the other end, who turned out to be Jack Ryan. He was ringing the guards as it happened, and you've struck up within 24 hours. It sounds like, given that Jack knew what you worked at, it sounds like a good chatty relationship. So long may you continue, Lauren, and Jack, long may you continue, and look after yourself.
Yeah, and thank you very much.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Not at all. Lauren and Jack. And Jack, we'll get your details on post in the Irish Times to organise to deliver your paper every single day.
Yeah.
Okay, pal. Mind yourself. Jack Ryan, Lauren and Casey, 51551. My chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Yesterday, we read out a letter, which is unusual, from a frontline worker in a hospital in Ireland about the situation. As you know, HSE employees aren't allowed contractually to speak to the media. That was controversial at the time. That might change in this new world we live in. And we read out the letter. It was quite a shocking letter, but they asked for the platform. We gave them the platform and let people, one, get a glimpse of the seriousness of it, if people still don't, to be reminded of it, and two, what our medics are going through. If anyone saw the report on BBC 9 o'clock news last night by Fergal Walsh, from inside, I think it's the same ICU unit that their Prime Minister is now in, unfortunately. It was really shocking, absolutely shocking, in terms of the amount of precautions medics have to take against this awful, awful virus that seems to spread like wildfire, and a reminder to all of us not to risk it. Do not risk it. This is another letter we got, and again we've checked it out and spoken to the midwife concerned. She again doesn't want to go on air because of that thing in her contract. But this is a horror story. I don't react, and it's not. I don't see it as my job. We want people to hear it, and to give these people a platform. And you hear it in the context of everything else you're hearing, which the good, the difficult, the challenging, or whatever. This is read by Sinead from our office.
Dear Joe, I am a midwife who has tested positive with COVID-19. I did my best to maintain the minimum of 1 to 2 metre distancing, but it is almost impossible in the environment we work in. I certainly believed I had excellent, meticulous hand hygiene technique, an exemplary cough etiquette, but now I am a victim of COVID-19. This is a scary, lonely place to be. I'm now chatting and receiving virtual hugs from my 7-year-old standing outside my isolation room door. I have to chat with my teenagers and husband via video call. I eat my meals alone in my isolation room, watch TV alone, sleep alone, phone ahead and tell my whole family to go outside so I can enter our communal living spaces to wash my kitchen utensils, etc. Now I reflect, how could I have avoided it? What did I do wrong in my workplace to get infected with COVID-19? How many of my colleagues have I infected? How many people that I have infected will be part of the serious critical statistics? Have I infected any women inadvertently? And most importantly, what about my very vulnerable family that all have comorbidities? Are they going to be safe? Dear Simon Harris, Tony Holohan, Paul Reed, Leo Varadkar, You have all been doing a tremendous job during this pandemic. And while your new range of measures to limit the spread of COVID-19 in nursing homes today is wonderful, you need to take this one step further. It is now essential all frontline workers are protected from each other. All frontline workers must be protected by wearing face masks, as social distancing is not a viable option for us. We frontline workers cannot stay at home, so we are looking to you to protect us and our families. Please, please, mandate the wearing of face masks for all frontline workers, as we inadvertently are a danger to each other. Yours sincerely, a vulnerable, scared COVID-19 frontline staff victim.
Thank you, Sinead. And that speaks for itself. It really does. And it's the same message again. But what part of yesterday's message was read by Fiona was about face masks for medics. I'm sure, I hope that's changing by the day. And there is regard, which is the sense we've all got, that there is regard for staff. And it was a point made by Brendan Gleeson last week when he was on with us on Thursday, that he feels, just as a citizen, that a lot of people who heretofore weren't being listened to are now being listened to, and that's a positive. John Whelan. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Your wife works in a Dublin hospital.
She does indeed. She's a healthcare assistant in one of the major Dublin hospitals here.
And why do you want to remind people about the importance of cocooning, the importance of sticking by the government regulations?
Well, unfortunately, Joe, as you know, you've heard a lot of stories about families who have lost loved ones and the trauma that they're going through, not being able to see them, and the consequences of a COVID death. But on frontline staff, like my wife, Larry, last week, had our first COVID death. She was on a COVID ward, okay, working with people who were dying. And part of her job is to care for the people who are dying.
Right.
And she would normally, natural instinct would come to any healthcare worker out there, is to hold the person's hand when they're dying. But she felt that it was an unnatural feeling for her, because she was covered in head to toe in PPE. She had double layer of gloves on, and all you could see was her eyes. And as this person passed, she just felt it was a natural thing for her to do, to hold that person's hand. But the doctor tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Don't do that," even though she had double gloves on. Unfortunately, the person passed away, and the protocols in hospital for any death is to try and get the family involved. And my wife's job would be part of her job, and every healthcare assistant out there would understand this, would be to prepare the person so that their family could see them. So they would remove any medical equipment that might have been used, intubations, IV lines, whatever, and they would clean the body, present it, and depending on the religion of the person, they would maybe place, if they were a Catholic, they would place rosary beads around their hands, put them into a fresh bed, and if possible, if it's possible in the hospital, to bring the person into a room on their own, have a candle and a crucifix. And the family can come in and then spend time with their loved one. But in this particular incident, and unfortunately since then, she's dealt with one or two more. The best way to describe it is it's something out of a movie, where they have to wrap the body up, remove all the medical equipment as normal, clean the body, and then wrap it in whatever they're lying in. Sheets that they're lying in is all wrapped.
Okay.
A face mask is placed over the nose and mouth. And then the body is placed inside a body bag, and a label with the person's name, MRN, and date of birth for ID purposes is placed and tied on the bag. And then they take the body away as soon as they possibly can, down to the mortuary. Now, my wife had a 13-hour shift last week when this happened, and herself and her colleague, they said their prayers over this person, just very quietly, and then they took the body out, took all the equipment out, the bed out for deep cleaning, and then they went and had a break. And normally, you know, staff would relate to this. They would normally have a conversation about what they've just experienced so that they can bounce off one another. But she said that there was no conversation between her and her colleague. They just had a quick cup of tea, 20-minute break, as they normally take. and then they were gowned back up again and straight back into the front line again to finish off their shift. And I knew myself that there was something not quite right. And she explained to me, we normally would talk about our working day, and she explained to me what happened. And I really felt for her because it was a hard day for her. And unfortunately, as so many of our healthcare staff out there know this, we've gone through this so many more times than we should do. But it's for people to understand exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, we've heard the family stories about their loved ones being taken away. They don't get to see them. They're buried, and it's really, really quick. But for the healthcare staff who are, they're the ones that are up close and personal, as you read from that letter from the midwife, they're up close and personal with these people, and they do get to know their patients quite well. And when they pass, they feel as though they're part of the family. But in this case, my wife said that evening that it was so unnatural that she just felt cold. And as I said, unfortunately, they've had to deal with a lot more deaths since then. And it's just maybe to try and tweak people's minds into not going out, staying home if they have to stay home, and to not help, you know, to not assist in the spread of this virus, because...
And one of the strong arguments I heard last week from one caller, when those people who rang up and they weren't getting the couple who went out in the car, especially, and they were over 70, weren't getting the message. I think a lot more people have now. But one of the points that was made was, listen, we have to do absolutely everything to stay away from hospitals. So if you decide to drive to your holiday home or whatever, apart from that it's wrong to do it at the minute, if, God forbid, you had a car accident or anything like that, you would be going into a hospital, and we need our hospitals to be concentrating, which they are, to be concentrating on COVID-19 as for reasons which the midwife before you made clear, and you as well, John, and that report, all the reports we're getting from hospitals, that they just need to be concentrating totally, completely on this COVID-19. And unless, and do not put yourself, and that includes DIY and getting up on ladders and doing things that you normally wouldn't do, and then ending up in A&E. Nobody, now, by the way, if you have to go to A&E, you go to A&E. That's the message as well. But try and avoid. And does when your wife comes home in the evening, that's quarantine, is it almost?
Well, basically, because I have an underlying health condition myself. I've been through cancer twice. So we're kind of living our lives separately in the home, as it is at the moment. We don't share cups, we don't share plates, knives or forks or stuff like that. That's just the protocol. It's been that way for the last number of weeks. I can't remember how long. But it's something that we get used to, and we do it. I walk out with her in the morning time. We're 2 meters apart. I'm walking the dog. She's walking into work. We tap our feet at the hospital gate, and I carry on walking, and then come on home. And when we come home, it's usually she's straight up to get changed, have a shower. She has a cup of tea, and then because she's working long days, she's wrecked basically, to be honest with you. And she's straight into bed, and then up for 6 o'clock the next morning, and heading back into work for seven.
Incredible.
And that's just our routine. But there was one very vivid thing that she said, which is all of her and all of our colleagues, they step into the front line every day. They're coming under enemy fire, and they're doing their best. They're putting up the best fight that they can. But she said, if people only realise that when we're fighting, we're actually fighting in a minefield, and none of us know which one of our colleagues is going to step on a mine and be taken out of the fight. So I would say to people who are determined to go to their holiday homes, wherever it is, and go walking on the beach, please think of that image.
Yeah.
That if you're walking on the beach and there's people in front of you stepping on mines, would you carry on walking on that beach?
Yeah. It is like a minefield what the health care workers are having to go through. John, thanks indeed. I hope everything works as best as it can, in these awful circumstances. That was John Whelan talking about his wife, who's a health care assistant on the front line. 51551, watch out.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. And the good news is that Boris Johnson, just before 1 o'clock, they're saying he does not have pneumonia. And he's stable overnight and remains in good spirits. And that was the whole tone of the British radio I was listening to early this morning was talking about Boris Johnson, which any of us, I don't never met the man, but in terms of his image, that he has such a lust for life, that he is a rambunctious personality and he does bring great energy to everything, whether you agree with him or don't agree with him politically, but he does bring great energy. Let's talk to Nessa Parkinson in North London. Nessa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
How are you doing? What's the feeling over there about COVID-19 now?
Well, I mean, things just change on a daily basis, don't they? We've all been trying to come to terms with everything for a long time here. I was very moved by listening to John just now talking about his partner.
Wife,
and
yeah.
I'm still pulling myself together a little bit, so yeah. I apologise for that.
Yeah,
but Boris Johnson is very lucky that he's doing as well as he is. You know, thank God he is. Nobody wishes the man any ill, you know. How could anybody wish him ill at the end of the day? I mean, I don't agree with him politically. There's no secret amongst my friends about that. But he is somebody's son and he is somebody's father and fiance and all the rest of it. So let's hope he stays well, because what people are facing in those intensive care units, the frontline workers and the people who are so sick, it doesn't really bear thinking about, you know. It's very difficult.
And you're in North you're in North London. What's the atmosphere there in terms
I mean, the atmosphere here is the local community atmosphere is fantastic, in terms of people looking after each other, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, we have a local ladies group here, do a lot of looking after each other, and we look after the older neighbours and all the rest of it. But, you know, I think when the news broke last night that he was as sick as he is, it sort of threw people into a lot of turmoil thinking about him, really, you know. How are we supposed to process the fact that he's our Prime Minister is so sick, or potentially so, you know, so we don't really know how it's going to go. Look, hopefully he'll come out and he'll be fine. But it gives people, and it's very, very destabilising. It's crazy enough situations as it is without, you know, putting your Prime Minister facing this into the equation, you know.
And you had a run-in with him, didn't you, in the Brexit, which was very well publicised. What was that about?
I know, I did. Well, I met him on the street in Enfield when he was out campaigning for the general election, and I had a few words to say with him. I put a bit of a fly in his ear about leading this country a merry dance about Brexit, and I have no regrets about that. I have a lovely photograph of it on my wall. So,
and did you mention the NHS to him?
Well, yes, I'm sure I did, actually. Yeah,
yeah.
Because he had all of that money.
That's right, that was the line.
Exactly.
Leave Brexit and give the money to the NHS.
Exactly. And that was probably, in fact, that was the first thing I said to him when I met him. I said, what do you think you were doing? Putting that number on the side of the bus and promising it to the NHS when you know that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, well, I believe we'll get all of this money back after Brexit. And I said, and will it go to the NHS? And he said, well, that's for the government to decide. Now, at the time, he was Foreign Secretary, and I said, well, you're the Foreign Secretary standing here in front of me. Tell me what you're going to do. And then, of course, he became Prime Minister. So, you know, the NHS, God love them, they're a fantastic, fantastic organisation. And, you know, the British people are very, very proud of the NHS.
I know that.
But the Tories haven't done it any favours for years, Joe, you know, really haven't. And it's disgraceful. And they're really struggling now, you know, trying to get PPE to the frontline workers. It's shocking. Mm. I've got a friend of mine down the road in North London. He's making visors with a 3D printer.
Yeah, they're doing it as well. Yeah.
And selling them, you know, one lad in his house, selling them to the Lister Hospital and to the pharmacies and all. And that's really, you know, really hard to think. They haven't really got their act together. So.
And what about your work, Nessa?
Yeah, so I've been furloughed now. I'm a furloughed worker as of yesterday. So up until now, I was trying to manage working from home and the children and my husband. He works for the BBC. Actually, he's a key worker in the BBC, to be fair.
Okay.
So he can't stop working. So it's really hard. So I'm a furloughed worker, and we work in recruitment, which, as all industries, is taking a terrible shock, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would have been looking after place and accountants and things, but that business all fell away very, very quickly. We were nearly 80% down in terms of, you know, potential revenues, and that had a big knock on. So they've let people go, they've put people on furlough, they've had to come to terms with all of that, you know. And now they've taken bookings and for temporary workers of all kinds, so drivers and cleaners and even, you wouldn't believe it, Joe, even coffin makers and hearse drivers and grave diggers. So, life is unrecognisable in terms of that. And it's easy because when you're at home and you're looking out the window and the sky is blue and everything's great and you have a bit of time on your hands that you didn't have before, then that's great. But the reality is, like John was saying, it's a minefield and you just don't know who's going to get sick next. So we have to just, be really careful.
Say with us, Nessa, because there is a lot of, and for everybody as well. And again, I was a little bit struck this morning listening to the Today programme, which begins at 6 o'clock on the BBC. It's a great programme.
I often tune in,
yeah. And I was struck that, obviously they went into the Boris story, but nobody began by saying, first of all, including Michael Gove, who was on, nobody began by saying, first of all, I want to extend my sympathy to the people who died, to the families of the people who actually died yesterday. I know they have to report the Prime Minister in intensive care, but anyway, I just thought it was a little lapse. But anyway, on behalf of politicians,
a little bit lopsided, isn't it? Because the people are dying in their hundreds on the day now, by the hundreds.
Say with us, Nessa. Zoe Healy has been on with us before as well. She's owner of Zenit PR. Zoe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And you recently were on before was that you worked with Theresa
That's
May.
Right.
With Theresa
I
May.
I did. I did a number of years back. And last time we spoke, I was somewhat involved. I'm actually currently with Clear Story International, which is an Irish PR agency.
Okay.
And I did work with both Theresa and Boris Johnson, obviously, as well, was there in those days. I mean, we're going back into the early 2000s here.
Yeah. And is that true? I heard one commentator say this morning, you always got a laugh out of him, too, when he was, that he's a good motivator. What was he like?
Well, absolutely. I mean, when people ask me what I think of Boris Johnson and what he was like to work with, I always remember how we knew that Boris was nearby because there was usually a media pack right behind him, camera crews, because he always had something to say. And of course, sometimes that was very often controversial. He was the kind of politician that you might have to take somewhere twice once to apologize. We all thought, oh gosh, here's Boris, what's going to happen next?
But he was.
He's
a likeable character, is he?
He is a very likeable character and very, very popular with the party faithful.
Okay.
Because he is entertaining and because he's quick-witted. And certainly since yesterday evening, I would still be very much in contact with my former colleagues when I was there working in the Conservative Party. Many of them are now members of Parliament themselves, and they're all very, very concerned about him and about his partner, Carrie Simmons.
Yeah.
And I think as Nessa was saying, and as you were saying this morning about the Today programme and not much recognition of the deaths that have occurred in the last 24 hours in the UK. But I think that, we all know Boris. And I think the media are very much reflecting over in the UK about, who's in charge right now.
Yeah. That's their big,
He might be likable and all that, Joe, but it doesn't make him a great politician and doesn't mean he's done the right thing by this country either.
Do you think
do wish him well on a personal level.
I know, I hear that, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think he moved quick enough.
Yeah, because a few weeks ago, wasn't he saying about shaking hands? There was no issue shaking hands,
he shook everybody's hand in the hospital, and how dangerous is that? And really irresponsible. And it was very difficult over here to see what was happening in Ireland with all the lockdown happening so quickly, and the Irish politicians coming out, and maybe there's differences in size of population. I don't know, but it was really kind of a little bit freaky to be here and that not be happening. And also to say to people,
oh, you know, so many people are going to be having mild symptoms. And that was very misleading, you know, to make it out like it was just a bit of a flu. That wasn't very fair to be talking about it like that. Okay. And then in the next part, he'd say, oh, people are going to lose their loved ones. Well, you know, he should have stepped up and done a bit more about it, to be fair, okay, and a little bit more quickly, because these people are dying horrendous deaths on their own in hospitals. I'm sorry that he's having to experience it. I'm glad he's not wrapped in a bag on a ventilator. Yeah. But, you know, it's not, that doesn't, because he's sick doesn't make him right.
Yeah,
and I want him to get better, and then I want him to come out and I want him to do better for this country. That's what I want him to do.
Any idea how Theresa May is, Zoe?
She's okay.
Yes, she is.
Yes, she is.
The way things are going, because Michael Gove is now self-isolating.
Absolutely. Michael Gove is in isolation, and he's obviously the Cabinet Office Minister. And Dominic Raab, who's now the First Secretary of State. It's so worrying.
Well, Theresa May. Thanks, Zoe. Thanks indeed. And the name of your company you're with now is what? Clearwater Communications.
Clear Story International.
Clear Story. And of course, you are related to the great journalist Kevin Healy. Am I right? You are.
And Justin Healy.
And Justin, the filmmaker. Yeah, in here, yeah. But Kevin, I was thinking about Kevin recently because when I was researching a book I wrote with Freya McClements about the children of the Troubles, the first child to die in a different world in 1969 was Patrick Rooney. Mm. And they're doing the report in the middle of the mayhem was your dad, Kevin Healy, and Deirdre. Great people. Zoe, thanks indeed. That's Zoe
great
Healy.
Likewise.
And Nessa, you look after yourself. I hope things can get better.
Joe,
yes.
Can I tell you who I'm related to?
No, tell us.
I'm related to a man called Joe Parkinson in Ballybrack and my mammy, Mary Parkinson. And I'm going to send him a big hello because I love them and I miss them and they're doing a great job cocooning.
Give them
a big kiss.
Well done.
Joe.
And Nessa, what age are your children?
Alva is 13 and Sean is 9. Alva shaved her head the other day for the NHS staff in the Whittington. Yeah.
Fantastic.
To raise money.
Okay. I want to give you all a good little laugh before you go. This is from this is Noah, and he's won just past his first birthday, and this is his laugh.
That's brilliant.
That's him in his high chair. Isn't he brilliant? Is there anything better than the laughter of
That's
children?
That's what we all need.
Yeah.
Very true.
Stop it, you bouncing. Noah. That's Noah. And his mammy is our series producer, Rebecca, who's out there mortified that I pulled that one on her. But that is Noah. Noah's laugh. You mind yourselves, the two of you and everyone else. Yeah. Thanks indeed. 51551. Wash hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Okay, quick plea. Annette is on the line. Her daughter's a first-year student in UCD nursing. She's made herself available for working on the front line. Annette, she's been contacted by a nursing home, isn't that correct?
Yes, that's right, Joe.
And where is the nursing home?
The nursing home is in Slogan.
In Slogan. And you need accommodation. Because members of your family are compromised... if she goes to work in the nursing home, which she wants to do, nobody wants her going back to your house, isn't that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so what do you need?
Oh, hold on a second, sorry.
Okay, take your time.
She has been on to UCD as she's a student there,
okay,
and she's hoping to get UCD a bed and a shower really is all she needs. And we're waiting for them to come back at the moment. Uh-huh. But there are a lot of properties out there that landlords have student accommodation that are free. It's not only her that needs accommodation, a lot of our friends are in the same boat, and really these properties should be given to the nurses and doctors that need them.
So in and around the Selorgan area preferably.
Yes.
You need, we'll just see what we get for your particular plea, and hopefully other people will get a sense of that there are people out there willing to give accommodation. It will only hopefully be for a short period.
But
people will manage. When is she willing to start?
She was due to start on Monday morning at 8 o'clock. She got the job on Sunday night at 11 o'clock from a local nursing home who were in dire need as they had an outbreak. and she said, I'm ready to go. And then her father said, listen, I'll have to leave or you'll have to get accommodation because I'm at risk.
Okay, so we need accommodation
and then,
urgently.
Yeah. And so she's her bag is packed here. She's ready to move and join the nursing home tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock.
Okay. So anyone out there with accommodation for one person in the Stillorgan? Now, preferably...
Yeah, Stillorgan, Blackrock, anywhere like that. She is a driver, so it's not...
And she has to be on her own. You can't offer her a bedroom in a house because she
No, you can't. Because
of the nature of the work. And the nursing home she's going into has got an outbreak of COVID-19. Yes. So we need an individual apartment or whatever in the Stillorgan area, which obviously with facility, shower, etc. UCD, UCD would be perfect.
Well, that's what I thought. A lot of students are gone home, so there'll be a lot of free accommodation. Okay, so I think they are still hoping UCD to make that available to her, but we just haven't had confirmation of it
yet. Well,
we want
it to happen today because we want to get her into working tomorrow. She's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair play to her, Annette. You should be very proud. I hope
we
you
are.
Yeah, okay, Annette. Thanks, Annette. 51551 for any offers. Joe at RT.ie offers of a genuine offers of accommodation in Stillorgan. Where is Henry Bourke? Henry, good afternoon. He was a consultant obstetrician in Kilkenny for 3 decades. Henry, you were listening to the midwife's letter and the difficulty.
Yeah, Joe, I know you're under pressure for time, but it's very simple, this issue. I've been involved over the years with the AIDS, MRSA, hepatitis, and all these sort of infections coming in. Now, I remember clearly, if we had a patient who was query hepatitis, we had to label the blood sample biohazard, so the laboratory took special precaution. Then, very quickly, they stopped the whole thing, because the assumption then was that everybody has hepatitis, right?
Right.
So therefore, there was no such thing as a biohazard bag. Everybody, all bloods were treated by the laboratory as potential hepatitis. Likewise, a member of staff, frontline member of staff, you have to assume that everybody has COVID, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So therefore, all frontline members of staff must have proper protection. Not on this, and that's the way it should work. That's the way the laboratory works. Universal precautions is what it's called. So it is very unfair for midwives who are dealing with blood, sputum, everything you can think of, feces, and don't forget the virus can be passed through the feces as well.
Yeah,
and at delivery, there's regularly feces present. So it's absolutely mandatory that midwives should get proper protection. Every frontline member staff is treated as universal precautions. That's what it's called.
And is it changing, Henry, or is there a debate about? Surely there's no debate about face masks for medical staff.
Well, I'm retired now, but it's obvious from the midwife that she wasn't the frontline people weren't been giving masks.
Yeah,
and that's basic protection, Joe. Yeah. That's outrageous.
I
volunteered, but I volunteered to go back. But I mean, I wouldn't be much use to most people being an obstetrician. But I mean, I'd certainly cover labour wards if everybody else was an issue. But I would insist, though, on having proper protection.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So that's it, Joe.
Okay, and
so
you volunteered to go back, and the idea is that you're an obstetrician, consultant obstetrician, but you would go and do your work, and that might free someone else up who has.
I'd cover the labour ward. I wouldn't. I cover the labour ward in emergency, no problem.
Okay.
But I'd insist on having full protection, you know?
Okay. Henry, so thanks indeed, and thanks for that contribution. That's Henry Bourke, 51551 Watchant.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
I know some of the stories were very difficult to listen to today, but that is the reality and a reminder that we all have to stick with the regulations. And as least movement as possible for loads of reasons. That's the message from today's programme. We will be back here tomorrow, as always. Today's producer is this child's mother. This is Noah again. People are requesting his laugh. He's just over a year. And this will play us out. Rebecca Meehan produced. And Ray Darcy is next. And this is Noah.